Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sans Pants Radio, Australia's most cowardly podcast network. Hello and welcome to Scaredy Boys, a podcast where three cowardly friends discuss horror movies. I'm Damien.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Tom.
And for this bonus episode, we're going to have a deep dive into teens, screams, and the themes of horror. So, firstly, yes, I did purposely make those rhyme, which will be very hard going forward with any other deep dive episodes.
I'm looking forward to the deep dive episode where the first word is orange. Oh, we're man. Looking at famous horror colours, orange and other ones.
So, Dave, my thinking was for this episode was that, yeah, we obviously have some great chats in horror, and there's this sort of things that keep coming up, but because we're obviously always talking about the movie in question, we never really get to go deeper into that sort of stuff.
And we're learning. We're new to horror.
We're learning, that's it. So it's kind of like a chance for us to, I guess, go back over what we've learned or even just go a bit deeper into what we've learned about the horror, this genre we're still relatively new to.
It's growing on me, boys. I'm still a scaredy boy, but the genre as a whole is growing on me.
Yeah, agreed.
Yes. I would agree.
Like, hate it.
It crosses over with a lot of genres I already liked in a lot of way. So yeah, there is a lot to like about horror.
It also feels like the horror community feel like a good bunch of people.
They're honestly the best.
Horror writers seem great.
Yep. I honestly think they're the most welcoming and accepting community. You look at obviously things like Star Wars or
Star Wars is full of the worst people.
I mean, yeah, obviously now it's unfortunately got a name for its toxicity, but literally horror, where terrible things happen on screen, are made by the loveliest of people. Yep. It's wonderful.
Horror Twitter's great.
Yeah, it's a good place to be, man.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've chosen these three topics mostly because they rhyme, but I do have a bit of a take for all of them. So let's start with teens. So my thinking about this was to sort of discuss why horror always seems to focus on teenage protagonists. There are obviously plenty of exceptions to this, but it's fairly undeniable that teens and horror obviously go together like Paddington and marmalade sandwiches, or Tom and being horny.
Delicious.
Yeah, it's true.
First one was delicious. The second one,
also delicious.
Yeah, why not?
Still delicious. Hey, Tom's living deliciously, buddy. Don't worry about that. So yeah, I guess I'll put to you guys, why do you think this is? Where has this connection come from?
Can I have a crack?
Go, mate.
Before you jump
please.
In, Sean?
Yes, sir.
So I was thinking about this today, and I was like, this might sound, I might feel like I'm a genius, but every horror writer in the history of horror is like, obviously, you fucking horny dumbass. But like, so horror, the whole thing about like the raising the stakes of horror, I feel watching movies is, and maybe the frustration we get when, particularly in slashers, they drop the knife.
Yep.
It's like, I think with horror, it's like you've got to give them something, but you've got to take stuff off them. So get rid of all the things they can do so that it makes it more stressful and it's more scary and everything's harder.
Okay. Yeah.
To make things harder immediately is if you make them kids or teenagers, they lose all of the support systems that adults have.
Yep. Yes.
They don't have disposable incomes. They don't have cars necessarily.
Yep.
They don't have the ability to just go to the cops or go and do this or call this person. They are kids and they are teenagers. So there are hurdles already in place with that. So if you introduce any element, and usually it's an adult.
Yeah.
Like I watched a movie the other night. It was a really great one, which we should do for this show. Mm. But one of the core conceits is this guy thinks there's a serial killer in his town, but he's like 15.
Yes, yeah.
And it's like, well, the hurdle is, A, he's right, but B, no one is going to listen to him.
Right.
He is on his own here.
Yeah.
And I think the reason you see so many kids or teenagers is that it's just such an easy way of removing support networks and removing advantages that adults would have in a horror. So you can immediately, the stakes are here.
Yeah, like,
up top, straight away.
That's great. Yeah, I thought about this today as well. I had 3 points, and one of them, I agree with you, Tom. It's convenience for the writer. Mm-hmm. It's what are the things I need to get out of this story, and what makes it easier for me to do, to tell a horror story, and I think it's teenagers.
Mm.
I just think age, experience kind of equals stupidity. So you can get away with some of the dumber things. So we watch these horror films sometimes, and we go, oh, why the fuck would you do that?
Yeah.
When it's teens, it's like, of course.
Yeah,
they don't know any better.
When I was 15, I would have done exactly the same fucking thing.
Right.
They're drunk. There's drugs involved. They're horny. They're stupid.
Yeah, like, you're so right.
It's the perfect cocktail for a horror film, really. I think another reason is, what's the target audience for a lot of horror films? It's that sort of 15-year-old bracket. So it's like relatability.
Yeah.
It's boys and girls, like kids going to watch horror films and seeing themselves on screen. Like, it's... I don't know.
Not even kids and teenagers seeing themselves on screen, but adults have all been kids and teenagers.
Right. There's a relatability still. Yeah. Yeah.
You'll get specific horror films that have like characters in a field where it's like, oh, I know nothing about that. And that's why it's interesting. But you'll get a huge glut of just teen ones because it's like, ah, oh, we've all been to like a cabin in the woods and been sitting around a campfire and drinking. And then there's been something scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
We all haven't been slashed to death and killed, but we've all like, we can all relate to that instantly. And the last point, I think, why teens are so prevalent in horror films is because they're no-name actors and they're cheap.
Huh.
Horror is a very low to no budget sort of genre of filmmaking. So you get these people, like, you don't have to pay them much.
Yeah.
All the money goes into the gore and the scares and the monster and stuff like that.
And it is fascinating to see just like, obviously, how many now big name actors made their start in horror in one form or another. I learned like Paul Rudd was in like Halloween 6 or something. I learned that the other day. It was one of his first movie roles.
But even like
Kevin Bacon was in, what's the one we watched? Friday 13th.
Horny Kevin. Johnny Depp is, you know,
of course.
He's in Thingo, Claws Boy.
When I think about Friday the 13th and Johnny Depp, all I think about is like, why did you carry that massive TV onto the bed and just like put it on your dick and just sat there?
He wanted to get close to the beauty pageant models. I think also, I don't even think it's necessarily like horror films. I think teen films, films with teenagers in them, whether they're horror or not, often have breakout stars because they're casting younger people for that reason, that they want someone unknown so that you don't go, oh, it's so-and-so. Like look at Clueless and the people in that. Look at, like, American Pie and the people in that. And then look at Scream, you know, how that sort of comes along and does those sort of things. I think that's a great kind of production. I'm here looking like, oh, from a story perspective, but I didn't even consider the production element of horrors made for cheap.
Yeah.
If you set them as teens, you can pay them less.
Yeah.
And then you can either go all in on having a Donald Pleasance.
Yes.
Or you know, whoever.
Yeah.
And you can also not feel pressure from a studio or whatever to keep people alive, because it's like, oh, you've got Chris Hemsworth in your movie, you've got to keep him alive for, you know, the second, third, fourth, and fifth sequel. It's kind of like, nah, everyone's expendable, we can kill whoever we want whenever we want.
Yeah,
it's
great. That's smart. That's good. I mostly came up with the horny element, which is that it's like, clearly that sells and people keep doing it. But I think you're right, and I kind of like, even just to combine both of your points, the relatability of being someone unequipped.
Yeah.
Like you said, all of us have been around that campfire telling scary stories. We've also just been in a situation where we've felt well out of our depth. And it's terrifying. It's terrifying to a point you kind of do stop feeling as an adult because, well, you kind of can think of at least the first thing to do or the second thing to do, or fuck, you can throw money at the problem or whatever. But yeah, all of us can think of a time when we were a kid and just being like, I have no skills in this element. I don't know what to do. I don't even know how to begin to know what to do. I just know nothing.
I think even just on the like the skill set, I think a perfect example of why that movie needs to be teenagers is something like It Follows. If that was an adult problem, that movie is shit.
Yeah.
But because it is teenagers, one, no one listens to teenagers. No one cares about teenagers. But the other thing that kind of works for that, particularly around the fact that it is a sex demon monster,
right,
is when you're a teenager, that is when you hit puberty, and that is when you're like, sex, what, how, now? And no one wants to talk to you about it.
Yeah.
but they expect you to behave. That's the other thing, is that everyone expects you to behave like an adult. Mm. No one wants to treat you like an adult.
Yes.
They expect you to know all of the information, but refuse to give it to you and get angry when you get it wrong.
Right.
There is a point where you're like, well, now you're an adult. And it's like, okay, cool, I'm going to go do this. Well, no, hang on, you're only 16.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, all right, so you want me to be, like, where's the... It's confusing. It's a stressful, hectic situation.
Yeah.
So there's already anxiety built into being a teenager. Yep. What if now you're a teenager and a man's going to kill you in your dreams?
Yep. Yeah.
There's also that very relatable thing where it's like, as a teenager, you're kind of rebellious. And it's like, it's that thing you mentioned before, Tom. You automatically kind of take parents out of the equation because as a teen, you're kind of like, oh, they don't listen to me anyway, or they're not.
Yeah,
you know,
you
don't have that support network, even though you do. You just think you don't. So that's another dumb choice of a teen.
But yeah, no, that's absolutely right. The minute you remove adult help, or you remove going to the cops, like teens or kids going to the cops, it's like, well, they're not going to fucking believe the story about to tell them is insane.
Yep.
Two, you're a teenager. Three, you've been drinking.
Yep.
Yeah. There's kind of because of, you know, movies have that sort of inbuilt distrust of police anyway, that kind of exists in real life as well, I suppose.
Sure.
Hey, horror says ACAB.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big time. Yeah. It always has.
Okay, well, then my next question on the teens topic is there a cohort of people that you think is sort of missing from the horror genre that you would like to see make an appearance in more horror films?
Well, that's a great question.
Like a subculture, because it's usually like outsiders,
or like age bracket, anything. Like, because I was even thinking, and I say this with genuine, no joke intended, the geriatric,
grandparents, man.
I genuinely mean that, and because to me, like, horror pivots on people being afraid of the consequences of what's happening, namely death. So having these protagonists that are older, further through their life, maybe not as concerned by the possibility of dying, as well as have had experiences to draw on, like, it might make them better equipped, which obviously means you do lower some tension there, but I also think it could just be really interesting to see, like, they're still lower equipped because obviously they're past their prime, they've aged, so they've still got some similarities with teens in that their bodies can't do what they used to be able to do. But mentally they've still got it all.
But that's great, because that's mentally good. They've got all the ideas, they go, I know how I want this to happen, and then physically they are unable to do that. And also you get, I think with older people too, if you had like grandparent aged people, you would have that thing of like them calling their son or daughter and been like, ah, there's a man outside, and they'd be like, all right, dad, all right, come on. I don't believe you. So it's like kids again. It's basically like teens, but just a different spin.
Exactly right. You're still losing that support now, because now people just think you're going senile.
And also, in the same way that maybe kids in a horror film don't have like a phone or access to a car or that sort of thing, an old person's lost their license. Right. They don't know how to use technology. It's actually really great. It's a great idea.
That's good. And like there's a lot of nice like things you can play with there. Like for teens in horror films, it's often sex, or it's like a slasher or some kind of thing like that element of it. Whereas for like an older group of people, you could have the killer be something that's like a dementia type thing.
Right.
Like it's like a, you know, it takes your memories away.
Yes.
Like, it's one of the blokes in the old folks' home is a vampire.
Yeah.
Like, I'm convinced that John, he's always got a new woman. John's a vampire.
That's
like, great.
Like, we've all seen the movie The Father with
Who's
in that one?
Anthony Hopkins and Olivia Colman.
Yeah.
Fuck, that movie's
That movie's stressful enough. Imagine throwing in a horror element to it, like a genuine
horror. Is a horror
that
film.
That movie kind of is a horror film. Yeah, great.
Yeah. That movie is a horror. I have hand on heart.
Yeah.
It's like you guys haven't seen it, but Relic is similar territory to that.
Oh, I'd like to do that for this show, I think, at some point.
To be honest, that makes me want to do it less, but
No, just because it's a pretty well-reviewed, Aussie horror film. We should give it a crack.
We should. We definitely should.
Boys, I think we should be writing that vampire in the retirement home story. I think that's great. Copyright scaredy boys. Fuck off.
Anyone listening to this, you can't have it. Eric Banner, fuck off. I know you're a regular listener. I will not return your calls.
All right, let's jump into the Scream side of things. So my thinking here was literally to talk about people screaming in horror films, as in the characters.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to open up broader. But I bring this up because lately I've found myself becoming really infuriated when characters scream in horror movies. It's literally my new pet peeve. I just get so annoyed. Like, I can understand why they're screaming and that's likely what would happen, but I also think it gets overused. What do you guys think about that?
I feel like I might be sounding stupid, but I feel like I haven't heard a scream in a horror movie for a while. But maybe I'm wrong. I watched two like in the last 2 days.
Yeah.
I can't think of one that we've done recently where I've been overly annoyed at a scream.
Well, I think it happened in one in a movie that I think in a movie we haven't actually recorded yet that's upcoming. It just drove me a bit wild. And I think what made me really think this is I was comparing it to like prose writing, right? Where if you've got a character just screaming their guts out, you're basically saying, hey, audience, they're really terrified. And I just don't feel like that's the thing I think annoys me the most is that's not needed. That's not necessary. Like if you describe how a character is feeling, it comes across to me sometimes as one, a bit dumb, like fucking do something, and then also a little condescending. I get that they're scared. The situation is scary. Like there's this great book called Educated by this woman Tara Westover. It's a biography of sorts, and she talks about growing up with this survivalist Mormon family.
Oof.
And it is like edge of your seat, heartbreaking account of things. And I actually listened to the audiobook, and she reads the audiobook, and she reads it in this sort of beautiful, soft tones that just is calming, but the things she's talking about are so terrible. But I realize halfway through listening to it that at no point does she ever describe her emotional state. Like, literally, never, I don't think. Like, not even once. And it's crazy because the whole time I am just on the edge of my seat because you kind of don't need to go all in on describing what a character's feeling or showing what a character's feeling so much on screen, because we know that it's awful and traumatic. Like it's literally the worst thing that's ever happened to them. And so I think when I hear lots and lots of screams on a horror movie, that's kind of where my brain goes, is that it's like, yeah, all right, we get it. Like sort of thing.
Yeah. I guess you're, I think the big one is characters scream and give themselves away. That's always a thing, that's but I think there's, I love it when they play with that, where it's like the character wants to scream but can't.
Yes.
Or like they have to.
That's when
hurt themselves good. And they've got to put their hand over their mouth or like bite down on something and they've got to be quiet. Or even just, you know, when they don't scream but they just do like a Bill Paxton, just like a game over, man.
Right.
Just like,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
all the terror. I'm done. That, I'm ready to
great.
Die.
Yeah. Yeah.
The hand over the mouth thing, that's great. And I think it's perfectly encapsulated in The Quiet Place.
Yep. Yes. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Exactly right.
With
exactly
Emily
right.
Blunt on the bridge. Like that. Yeah, for me, I get what you mean, Dame. I think the screams are kind of essential to this genre,
of course,
I think.
Yeah.
Or a certain subgenre within horror films.
What's that whole Scream Queen thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah.
The fact that there is a very famous franchise called Scream.
Yeah, yeah that too, yeah.
That's for sure. For me, I find like the quickened breath is the scariest thing.
Yeah, I find that more terrifying.
I definitely do too.
Yeah.
And there's a weird, because this isn't a horror film, but one that I'll always remember. Because I just think it's great acting inside a big studio film, which is in The Dark Knight Rises.
Okay.
And it's when Gary Oldman, his Gordon character, goes down in the caves when they're looking for Bane.
Yeah.
And he pulls the gun out and there's the explosion. And then it's just like Gary Oldman's quickened breathing and he's terrified. Mm. And in that moment, I was like, that's actually like legitimately good, because a lot of films wouldn't do that. They would just be like, he's a cop, he's got a gun, he's brave, he's going to chase the bad
guys.
Right,
right.
But they just take like 3 seconds,
yep.
5 seconds to show that he is fucking terrified.
Yes.
And he sells it. Because, I mean, horror is all about fear.
Yeah.
And so they have to sell the fear. I'm with you. I actually don't like the scream.
Yeah, like that's the thing. I think it undersells the fear.
I prefer the silent fear that is just like subtle acting that really sells it.
Just on quickened breath. I'm currently playing a video game that I don't think either of you will ever play.
Great. Yeah. I could. I already know what the game is and I could. Yes, I'm never going to play it. I'm playing fucking Legend of Zelda over here. I'm not playing that.
Resident Evil Village. It's a game that is. I was playing a level a while ago that was so scary and so tense, I had head and neck pain.
Oh.
It is truly awful, but also. Yeah. Fucking great game, and I'm enjoying it immensely in a really perverse way. Like, I think about it, I'm like, oh, it's really fun, and then I'm playing it, and then I get to a moment where I know something bad's going to happen because, like, the music starts to creep up, and you're like, oh, no. But
that's Mario Kart, man.
Right? Here's the thing, though. In that game, it's a first-person shooter, and you're playing this guy, Ethan, and there are things where, like, when monsters are nearby or you see monsters, even if you're, like, it'll be daylight. I've got a gun far enough away. I'm like, oh, beautiful. I can snipe these guys in the head. The minute you see them, he starts breathing heavier. Like, ooh, he's scared. You become scared, even though you're like, no, I can do this. I'm fine. Yeah. I'm not this isn't a big jump scare one. But when he sees something terrifying, he reacts to it. So if you walk into a room and there's like bodies hanging from the roof, he will like breathe heavy. And in this part of the game that was really scary, you're basically in the basement of the house and the power's off and you've got like a shitty little torch and that's it. And it doesn't penetrate the gloom of a hallway and the music's increasing. And before you see it in the game, he realizes something's coming towards you. So he reacts. It's just, good. So I think quick in breath over scream, but also I feel the need. I get why the screams are there. They're good, you know? Sometimes someone needs to die horrifically and we can't show you that they're going to die horrifically because production. We're just going to film a tree and just you're going to hear a scream.
Right. I guess like, they've got their place in horror. I'm not saying remove all screams from horror. I just think,
Jesus, Damo.
That's a big call, mate.
It's a big call. Hey, I've watched over 50 horror films now. I think I can call these shots. But yeah, I just think there are other alternatives that some lesser films should probably look into to actually enhance what they're trying to get across.
Yeah, anyway, like genuine acting.
They lean towards, genuine acting, that too. Well, another question on the scream front that I want to ask you guys. Have either of you ever like let out a proper scream from watching a horror film?
Yep.
not a scream queen scream, but like definite sounds. Yeah, like a, I think you guys have probably been in the room when I've done one, when we watched The Conjuring.
For sure.
Right. Yeah.
Now, I let out a...
You'll hear it again.
A noise that I'm not... a noise that I'm, A, not proud of, and B, didn't know I was capable of making until... Yeah.
It's horror, baby.
I watched a movie. I don't know if you guys have seen it, Damo. You might have. Sean, maybe you have as well. The movie is As Above, So Below. There was a scare in that movie that made me gutturally yell.
Yeah.
Like... awful noise. We should do an episode on
fuck.
Yeah, we should.
You son of a bitch. I think, I can't remember if she screams in the film. In The Invisible Man, does Lizzie Moss actually scream? All I remember is just like quickened breath and just genuine fear.
Yes.
Through acting power.
That's a great example of acting power and not relying on screams. Yeah.
I think she does scream though.
Yeah, she probably does. I should
I think when
it.
She throws the paint on the fucking suit in the attic, she screams.
Yeah.
I think she doesn't scream when the stabbing happens.
Yeah, we do though, probably.
Yeah, but I think she definitely screams a couple of times.
I think you can flip this the other way too, because we watched one, The Woman in Black, which is almost kind of verging on infuriating at times because Daniel Radcliffe doesn't react in a way that I think is real. It's like, be scared, please.
Right,
like for a lot of it, he's just kind of like, this is happening. Which is remarkable that it's still as terrifying as it is.
Yes.
Because normally I live like the fear of the character. That kind of like fuels me when I watch it. But for a lot of it, he's just kind of pretty chilled out.
Yeah. I think Invisible Man's a really good example of using screams well and knowing when not to use them. Because like if she was screaming all the way through that movie, for example, I wouldn't be able to deal with it. I would be done.
Oh, yeah. It would be insufferable.
Right. But because she's got the breathing, she's trying to stay strong, she's going. So when the scream comes, like one, it's earned. You now have got like, the truth has been revealed. And so she lets out a scream, but then she also continues to get on with it. Like that's,
it's great.
I think that's what I like about it.
Maybe screams are kind of like jump scares in a horror film. Give yourself one big one and then get out.
Yeah. Cause they are tension relievers in their own way, I think as well, because like, you've just let it, like you almost are giving up hope because you're not trying to be quiet. Like being quiet is hoping you can still evade this by just letting out a big guttural scream. It should happen when you've lost all hope. So if your first move is to let out a big guttural scream, then fuck you. At least try something.
You're dumb.
I think also there's a distinction between like a scream and like someone gets stabbed and like yells in pain or puts their foot into a bear trap or loses an arm in a Saw movie or something. I think there's a level of that, but I think it's interesting that I'm trying to think of like just, you know, this is the way the genre works. It's usually the final girl and it's usually female characters that are screaming, but like a good example of a male character who constantly yells and is terrified is the Evil Dead series,
right?
Where Bruce Campbell's character, he just screams.
Good.
Like he's like, fuck, he just yells. It's
all right, last question on the scream front. Have either of you guys, do you have a memory of when you've actually like genuinely screamed in real life? So you've been the character in a horror film, something scared you and your reaction was to scream.
I've probably repressed it into my egg.
Yeah, sure. There's a few screams bouncing around your egg.
I could almost guarantee that it would have happened.
Yeah.
Like growing up on the farm somewhere, like the power going out one night, me having to like run back down from dad's shed and thinking a monster's following me. There'd be definite times in my life where I would have screamed.
But would you scream? Like this is, because like I'm definitely like, I was a very fearful kid. I'm still a bit of a fearful man, maybe not as much. But I always found whenever something scared me, my reaction was never to actually scream. I would actually, if anything, just go, yeah, like super quiet, I think.
Yeah, okay.
My heart would be racing. Like I'd be very aware that my heart was racing, that my adrenaline was up and all that sort of stuff. But if anything, like I didn't really react in any perceivable way. If you watch me from the outside, like yeah. I haven't really reacted.
I reckon as a kid I would have like woken up from a nightmare screaming.
Yeah, okay.
But I feel like that's a bit different to like, that one feels like it's okay as opposed to like me seeing something horrifying and pointing out at it and screaming. I don't think I would do that, which is like a horror character thing. Yeah, I can't recall one specifically, but I'm sure it would have happened. It's in there somewhere. Yeah. It'll come out one day.
Yeah.
I've screamed in like haunted houses, like the rides.
Yes.
So that's like the perfect fucking environment. I've let out again, noises I didn't know I was capable of.
Yeah. Well, you guys both know my cousin, Dom.
Yep.
So he's the same age as us. He screams almost on the daily, I reckon. He's the most, sorry to throw you under the bus, Dom, but.
He seems like a screamer.
He is literally he will jump and scream at nothing. If I'm sitting next to him and I just go, whoa. He will literally scream. Like, it's not even fun after a while because it's too easy.
I love that.
On the, like, ghost ride side of things, when we were maybe, I want to say 15 or 16, maybe even a little older, we went on this ghost ride together at Melbourne Show. And, like, within the first, like, basically it was on this track, there's these big doors, and after you go through the first two doors, you realize as soon as you go through the door, someone's going to come out and scream at you.
Yeah.
And that was the system the whole way through. Different people in different costumes. You pass through a door, someone screams at you. Dom screamed at every single door.
I love that. Yeah. We should watch a movie with him.
Oh man. We definitely
Conjuring should. 3, baby.
Yeah, let's start him off hot.
Yeah. That'd kill him.
I would honestly kill him. Like, I would be concerned.
It's going to kill us.
Yeah. Fuck.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, so lastly, themes. Let's move on to themes. I wanted to discuss, the themes that obviously exist within horror. Now, obviously, there are lots of themes that can exist within any story. But are there any that you guys think naturally lend themselves towards horror?
Survival, obviously, is like one. But I think that's like that's a thing. But I don't necessarily think it's like a big one. I think there's some that I like. I mean, we were all at uni together and that guy came into those lectures with us and he was talking about horror films and he was like, the hero becomes a monster, they overcome the monster.
Yeah,
right. All the science will fail, all the religion will fail, all of the things they know how to do will fail, and the way they have to win is they have to bring themselves to that level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just an interesting thing that happens in those kind of movies, that like, how far are you willing to forego your own humanity in order to beat a monster.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting one because it's kind of like that theme to me talks about something more primal in us that we probably don't often confront.
Yeah.
And that I do think other movies, like survival movies, definitely cover that as well. But I don't think there are tons of other movies that naturally go head to head with that the way horror does, because obviously for horror it's almost always a life and death situation. So that one's really interesting. And I also think on the flip side of that, something that I quite like is sort of retaining your humanity in humane circumstances.
Yeah.
Overcoming that primal instinct, not going all Lord of the Flies on everyone, but like facing the horror, but keeping hold of that side of yourself. Like, I think that's a theme that again, because it's got hope in it, I can connect to more. I think where like losing yourself, becoming the monster feels like, yes, you won the day, but at what cost?
I think we can all, like on that and just the flip side of that, I think we can all agree that that's a great thing and is pertinent, I guess, to bring up a book that we have all read and may have talked about before, but that we all love, which is Grady Hendrix's My Best Friend's Exorcism, which is the perfect distillation of that, where at first it feels like, right, how much of your humanity are you going to have to lose to go up against the devil? And then it's like, no, to beat the devil, you've got to be more human.
Yes.
So it's like, there's just some really nice stuff in that. Fucking go read that book. It's a fucking great book. Read all of Grady Hendrix's book.
Yeah, that's
brilliant. Man's a jet.
Yeah.
I think it's funny, we all look for the same thing in horror, I think. Because I jotted down that one too. I just love humanity being tested in the face of a monster, whether it's a single person coming up against one or it's a group, and it's how people get torn apart in like the face of fear.
Yes.
And it's, keeping hope and that sort of thing. I think it's funny. We all kind of look for the same thing, I think, in stories. Not to say that's all I want. I can watch thematically a bunch of different stuff, but that's the one that I come back to. I really love that one specifically.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
And on that, like that group of people coming together, that's sort of another theme. I think it's something Stephen King, I've read a number of his books now, and I find that something that he keeps repeating is this sort of this found family, this sort of group of disparate people banding together because there's this monster they got to defeat. And in that, finding their family. And like, it's just never not satisfying to me. I just fucking love it every single time.
I agree. I love that too. Like the broken people who are coming together and they kind of like have to fix each other and make each other better. A ragtag team against a monster.
Oh, fuck yeah.
That's always great. A ragtag team. Yeah. I love, because, and I think that's the thing, is that your heroes in horror films are usually outsiders because they're more susceptible to seeing the things that other, you know, the cheerleader dies first. The weird kid is the one who, you know, survived. Like that kind of plot point. But I think that's the nice thing, is friendship overcomes trauma, right? Is that kind of the
nice. You know, I love it.
Beautiful.
That you create family or you create friends and you use it to defeat the thing that you have to defeat. And I think, I feel like every Stephen King story ever features ragtag people.
Yes. Yeah.
Like I'm struggling to think, there's like maybe a few where it's one person, but usually they're working with someone else at some point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like it works so well. Like honestly, like even look at the Avengers versus the Justice League. They purposely in the movies try to make the Avengers ragtag, even though they're fucking gods and heroes. But they try to get that ragtag element in there so that we empathize with them, we like them when they do come together. It's so satisfying. Where
they're fallible.
They're fallible, exactly right. Whereas Justice League, they're not ragtag. They're just fucking gods walking amongst us. Like I don't care if they're buddies or not.
Yep.
Where the Avengers, I love it, you know?
I think that's it. I think, if with horror, you've got to have people to give a shit about. So having an ensemble gives you more chances.
Yeah.
So I think if the theme of having like friendship or a group of strangers, I think even if you can't relate to like the main ones, there'll be someone like, perfect example is something like It, right? Or even Stranger Things.
Yeah.
You might not be able to relate to every kid in that group, but there is one of those kids that you're like, oh, I've been that kid.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been that kid.
Sure.
And like even the example of the book we were talking about, My Best Friend's Exorcism, it's about teenage girls. Now, I don't know about you guys. I've never been a teenage girl. No. When I was a teenage boy, teenage girls, mysterious and scary. So I couldn't ever relate to that, but at the same time, you can relate to like other parts of the story and it's still, you buy in and you're on board 100%.
Yeah. I think because friendship is universal.
Yes. And being a teenager, which ties us back to, Damo, did you deliberately do this so that we would talk about the first point again?
No, I definitely didn't. But I'm glad we got there. That's great. Well, my very last question on themes and for this episode is there themes that you like in other genres or other types of film that you'd like to see more in horror, and sort of like, I guess that the sort of themes that would maybe even subvert horror in some ways?
I've always liked, like, one of my favorite tropes in movies, and a lot of my favorite movies have this element in particular, the idea that one tiny event involving one person has consequences to someone over there. And the perfect example is something like Fargo or Burn After Reading, where one dumb little thing, like this guy dropping his CD of his divorce papers at a gym, five people die.
Yeah.
Or Fargo, one guy being like, I hate my wife
and
her dad.
Yeah.
I'm going to get money off him. And by doing that, all of it just, like, I really like, that one mistake or one decision that someone makes that just seems innocuous and they kind of fuck up and it's like, oh, whatever. And I think that is in horror. Like, Blair Witch Project, one person makes one mistake, they kick over some rocks. Or even as simple as like something like The Witch. They make one mistake, they end up in the middle of nowhere and their baby gets kidnapped. Yeah. And then Blake Phillips like, hey, come join my party.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, I like the idea of people being unaware of the repercussions of their actions. Yes. And then you as a reader or as a watcher of this omnipotent kind of story power view that you have, you can see all of the dominoes falling over before they've even connected. Yeah. Yeah. I like that kind of
thing. Because like for horror, it's always like directly related to the person.
Yeah.
They've kicked over the stones or they were a bad person, so they had this coming or what have you. Like it, there's this direct connection. But I do love the idea that someone's come up, kicked the stones over and fucked over five other people and they've got off and been fine.
And they're fine.
Yeah.
Like in a way, it's kind of what like Army of the Dead almost does, but doesn't.
Yeah, that's Army of the Dead's a good point because that's probably what I want to see more is just like genres colliding with horror. Or even like I always come back to The Descent because I just love that you take the monster out of it and you've still got a film.
Yes, yeah.
That's what I want to see more of in horror. And I know that a lot of that does exist, but it's, horror doesn't need to be so high concept, I think. I think it can be more these sort of interpersonal dramas that just happen to then have a monster or a supernatural element surrounding it. Yeah. Like a bit of a clash of genre is great.
Yeah. Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. And even on that, like I was kind of thinking like I love a movie or a story with a bit of whimsy, a bit of like sort of that fantasy edge creeping into our life. And like they're definitely like, Del Toro obviously has a lot of that side of things. And like I like the idea of taking whimsy and almost corrupting it. So like even like having, I don't know, like your Pixie Dream Girl sort of thing and starting off in that kind of space and then slowly it becoming a horror, like there being some sort of connection there.
Yeah. Are you pitching a better version of the movie Ruby Sparks?
Maybe. I haven't seen it. Let's say yes. But yeah, like having these sort of more whimsical, what are generally more positive sort of affirming elements and then, and even I love the idea of playing them as that to begin with, like keep them in the genre they're in and don't really let on that it's a horror until partway through.
Stealth horror is good. Let's see more themes of stealth horror where you're like, okay. Oh, he's got swords for hands.
I love that that's the first one you went to.
Yeah.
Well, you've always got any more thoughts or comments on any of that?
I feel very clever, boys.
Really?
No, not really. I feel very dumb. I feel very stupid. But again, I think it's, I guess I want to be clear that I don't know stuff, but I'm learning stuff and it's exciting and I love talking about stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why we do a podcast because we like talking about stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's about, it's literally like, hey, I watched this cool thing or I learnt this new thing. I want to share it with my mates. Like that's the beauty of it. So yeah, I agree. Like for these sorts of podcasts, we are by no means experts. In fact, quite the opposite. That's the whole point of this podcast. So yeah, it's nice to sort of talk about these things that we're discovering, even if other people have kind of known them for decades.
Yeah, it's both the scariest and the most exciting genre, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Well, we're not going to finish on a better note than that. So I've been Damien.
I've been Sean.
And I've been Tom.
And if you're scared of listeners would like to send us any comments or give us your deep dive thoughts or even suggest some other topics for us to dive deep into, you can email us at 3scaredboys@gmail.com or you can find us on Twitter at @scaredyboys or individually, I'm at Midday Pajamas.
I'm at Carney from 55.
I'm at Awkward Trade.
Stay scared, everyone.
Okay. Oh, he's got swords for hands.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.